couple refugees hiding in each other for a little while. I don't know about tomorrow or what's gonna follow the sunlight, but this world could be a little less lonely tonight.
All right, good morning, beautiful Texas. Cable Smith welcoming each and every one of you to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hop Power Polaris. A Little Less Lonely is the name of that one from Jeff Allen. Great stuff there. Love that tune. Well, I am absolutely thrilled to be here talking hunting and fishing with you guys today. It's going to be a good one, so pour yourself a cup of coffee and pull up a chair around that campfire. Off the top, we're going to check in with our good buddy and former Texas Ranger fireballer. Some of y'all might know him as the Amazing Emu, and some of you might know him just as good old Jim Kern. But anyway, after baseball, Jim started his own outfitting service, Emu Outfitters. And Jim has guided all over the world for salmon in Alaska, brown bear as well. Also, desert mule deer in Texas and Arizona. And, of course, peacock bass in the Amazon rainforest down there in Brazil. So we've got a lot to talk to Jim about, including... And it's funny how I time these things, right? But anyway, our two-time defending AL champion Texas Rangers open up the season against the White Sox this weekend. And we're going to talk a little baseball, not too much, but we'll get Jim's opinion on how many games he thinks this team will win, why they're equipped to make another postseason run, and also what he thinks of old Yu Darvish. So great stuff coming up there with the Amazing Emu. Then a real treat when Casey Kiefer, you might know him of Dropped Project Alaska, he's going to check in with us. Many of y'all probably saw Dropped Project Alaska on Sportsman's Channel. Him and his brother Chris were dropped off in the Alaskan wilderness for an entire month and had to live off the land hunting for caribou, moose, and wild blueberries. It was a great show. If you haven't seen it, check your DVR and start recording those reruns, because I promise you, you will enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to talking with Casey about that month in the Alaskan wilderness, really roughing it out there. So that's what's on this morning's docket. Should be a good one. I am thrilled about it, but heck, when am I not thrilled to be talking hunting and fishing with y'all? Speaking of hunting, hope everyone is having a great turkey season. The North Zone opener was this past weekend, and I was fortunate enough to head out to Squaw Mountain Whitetails in Jacksboro and do a little hunting. I was actually guiding. This is my first time guiding turkey hunts, but I had a blast guiding my buddy Mike out there. And unfortunately, he didn't get his first turkey. We sure as heck tried, though. I actually called in four toms, and some of them from a long distance away. I mean, they were very vocal this past weekend, really responding to the call well. But for some reason, they'd hang up at about 60 yards just outside of shotgun range. And so Mike and I never could seal the deal. Tried different decoy strategies, started using a hen and a gobbler, then we started using just a Jake. I mean, no matter what we did, it's just like, man, I couldn't figure it out. But I guess that's why they call it hunting. I did get a Jake down on Sunday afternoon. Mike went out to hunt scimitar, horned oryx, and Attix. Squaw Mountain Whitetails has tons of beautiful exotics as well. And he actually got an Attix down that afternoon. And while he was doing that, I went out and got myself a Jake. So did get on the scoreboard, not the the trophy that I was, really looking for. But we've got some meat in the freezer, and it was a great weekend out there just talking to those toms. I tell you what, that is hard to beat, in my opinion. A couple other things. Don't forget, our Photo of the Month contest is going on right now, and our April grand prize is a custom pair of Costa Del Mar sunglasses. This month's winner will get to customize their own pair of shades from Costa, however they want them. All you have to do is send me your best outdoor photos to cablewaco@yahoo.com. And you'll have a chance to win those Costa Del Mar shades. Let's see, a couple other things here. Don't forget, our Lone Star Outdoor Show t-shirts are available on my website at lonestaroutdoorshow.com. We've got the Hey Vegetarians, My Food Poops on Your Food, because it does. It really does. And then, of course, we've got the Hey PETA, You Can Kiss My Texas A, asterisk, asterisk. And, of course, we've got the classic Loved or Hated, But Never Ignored. And all those come with our logo on the front. And those phrases on the back. So check those out at LoneStarOutdoorShow.com. Also, don't forget to like our Facebook page at Lone Star Outdoor Show. And then if you're on Twitter, You can follow me at Lone Star Outdoor. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by former Major League All-Star, the amazing Emu, coming up next on the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Yeah, it's a long way back to get to where I've been. Broke down again.
Concan's River Rim Resort is the gem of the real Texas Hill Country. Located along the pristine Frio River, outdoor enthusiasts enjoy birdwatching, bat flights, and of course, tubing or kayaking to Frio's crystal clear waters. Situated near Garner State Park in northern Uvalde County, River Rim is in the middle of a sportsman's paradise with ranches full of exotics, whitetail, and dove hunting opportunities. River Rim Resort offers cabins and RV sites, as well as a great venue for weddings and corporate retreats. Visit RiverRimResort.com today. That's RiverRimResort.com. Do you have a hog problem at your ranch or deer lease? We have the solution. The System Hog Trap comes in two sizes, 17-foot and 30-foot diameter traps. After you trap the hogs, take the top section off the trap and use it for another feeder site to keep the hogs away from the feeder. The System is both a trap and a deer food plot fence. That way you don't waste your money on just a hog trap. Call 940-391-3669 or visit www.goinfencing.com. That's goinfencing.com.
Hey everybody, this is Brian Spagnuolo from TexasMotorCars.com. I'm here today to tell you about the best place in Texas to shop for your next vehicle. TexasMotorCars.com is a family-owned and operated business located in Addison, Texas. We have a huge inventory of pre-owned vehicles and specialize in trucks and SUVs. Please visit TexasMotorCars.com today. Come see me, Brian Spagnuolo. Our phone number is 972-481-1660.
2011 Z521 Ranger Boat with a 250 Pro XS Mercury Motor. Falcon Rods, Lowrance Electronics, and Lake Fork Trophy Lures are just a few of the perks you'll enjoy when fishing with Lake Fork Fishing Guide Heath Hardwick. Customer service is Heath's primary goal. Well, that and putting you on the fish of a lifetime at the legendary Lake Fork, Heath has built his business on integrity. His passion is bass fishing, and he loves sharing a lifetime of knowledge with all of his customers. So call Heath Hardwick at 903-440-2358 or visit him at heathhardwick.com. That's heathhardwick.com.
The new Bobcat utility vehicle is here at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth, and it's hungry. Get ready to work like an animal and love it. Powerful, ultra-comfortable, and sure-footed, this lineup of vehicles delivers legendary Bobcat performance, so you can sink your teeth into a wide range of jobs. With twice the horsepower, 1,850 pounds of payload capacity, and four-wheel independent suspension, you will love it. Stop in at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth to see for yourself.
Newland Real Estate is North Texas' premier acreage property specialist. Their knowledgeable and experienced brokers take pride in working hard to help you buy or sell the perfect horse, cattle, or hunting ranch, investment properties, and rural residences. Even with the current economy, Newland Real Estate closed over $38 million in sales last year. So when you see the Circle Inn, you know it's the name you can trust. You can search all multiple listing services on their website at www.northtexasrealestate.com. That's northtexasrealestate.com. Newland Real Estate, your acreage property specialist.
Nobody said it was easy. No one ever said it would be this hard. Oh, take me back to the start.
Oh man, what a great tune. Willie Nelson actually doing a Coldplay cover there. I don't know what it is, but old Willie still has about as soothing a voice as I've ever heard. Anyway, I'm Cable Smith, welcoming everybody back to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. This segment of the program proudly brought to you by Sendero Seed Company, Texas' premier food plot source. They've got everything you need for your spring and summer food plots, including buck forage oats. Call my buddy Rob Hughes, 1-877-610-SEED, or visit SenderoSeedCompany.com to place your order today. Well, without further delay, let's go ahead and welcome our first guest back to the show, a longtime friend of ours. He's a larger-than-life personality, a former Major League All-Star pitcher for your Texas Rangers, turned professional hunting and fishing guide. It's the amazing Emu, Mr. Jim Kern. Thanks for dropping in.
Well, enjoy it. It's always good to hear from you, Cable.
It's always great to have you on the show. I know that y'all just wrapped up the peacock bass fishing season down there in Brazil. So how was this year?
This season was much like last season. We've had La Nina sitting off the coast of Chile in the Pacific for the last 2 years, and the water has been abnormally high virtually the entire season. We caught some good fish, but to be completely honest, the numbers were not what they are normally, as the water was any place from an average of 3 to 5 feet higher during a season than a normal year.
Yep, it makes it harder, just more places for the fish to hide. Now, I have been fortunate enough to get down to the Amazon rainforest in Brazil 4 times, actually, on mission trips. And in between the church building and well digging, we were able to get out there and do some peacock bass fishing. And Jim, I tell you what, man, I'm convinced there's not a more beautiful place on this earth.
It is. It's unbelievable. People view the Amazon and they think of mosquitoes and mud and such. And actually, the areas we fish up on the upper Rio Negro is what's called the Blackwater River, are completely the opposite. The rainfall leaches the tannins out of the bark and leaves of the trees, creates humic acid. It's much like Caddo Lake. The water looks that tea-colored. The big plus is, one, it leaches all the color out of the sand. The sandbars are what I call hurt your eyes white. And it also creates humic acid, and mosquito larvae can't live in the humic acid. Consequently, on the river itself, you will see no mosquitoes at all. Now, if you get adventuresome to take a walk back in the rainforest, which necessitates a machete and a sense of humor, you'll find some mosquitoes.
Oh, man, I absolutely love the Rio Negro. You know what, Jim? Let's get into how a former Major League All-Star hurler, a fireballer nicknamed the Amazing Emu, how do you transform into a world-class hunting and fishing guide?
Well, we didn't make a complete transition. My company is Emu Outfitting. It's what everybody in the Dallas-Fort Worth area knew me as. And I had hunted and fished from the time I was 3 years old. My first memory in life is my father putting me on his shoulders and carrying me out in these big artificial piers into Lake Michigan to fish all day, tying me to the dock, and then carrying me back at night. My wife used to accuse me of playing baseball simply to pay for all my hunting and fishing trips. And then once I retired, actually I didn't retire, I just ran out of teams. In 1986, I started Emu Outfitting, which at that time was oriented around Texas hunting and fishing leases with a little bit of outside booking. Then in 1998, I was hired to take over the American office for a peacock bass fishing operation out of Brazil. Did that till 2003 when I couldn't get along with the owner anymore and quit. Then I spent 4 years in Alaska managing Alaska's Rainbow Bay Resort, which was 180 air miles southwest of Anchorage and accessible only by air. We did fishing from June through September and then hunted brown bear in September and October. And then 2 years ago, a gentleman from Brazil, when I was down there fishing, talked to me about starting a marketing company for his operation, which was Captain Peacock Expeditions out of Manaus, Brazil. We have an extremely nice 100-foot yacht. People stay on. We're in the process this year of sending down new tracker bass boats, and it's probably the most upscale operation in Brazil's Amazon. Mm-hmm. Plus, one of our fishermen in February of 2010 caught a 28-pound fish that broke the long-standing world record as the all-tackle IGFA world record peacock bass. So not only is it very upscale, but we probably have some of the best guides and equipment down there. Been doing that for a couple years now.
Man, I tell you what, if you're a serious freshwater angler, you need to save up and make it down to the Brazilian rainforest, the Amazon River Basin, at least one time, because these peacock bass fight like nothing you've ever experienced. I guarantee you that. And Jim, my dad caught an 18-pounder on one of his trips, and that fish was massive, but I can't imagine hooking into a 28-pound peacock bass like one of y'all's fishermen did.
It's peacock bass are found across South America. They're cousins to the African cichlids. They really aren't a bass. They're what's called a cichlid, which is visualize a 25-pound smallmouth bass having a bad hair day. They have a very ill sense of humor. They're structure-oriented. We're using 65- and 80-pound test-braided Kevlar line on these fish, And it has never ceased to amaze me how a 20-pound fish can break 50-pound braided Kevlar line. But the whole war is to keep them out of the brush once you've stuck them. And big-time jumpers, all kinds of power. They don't make long, sizzling runs. It's more like hooking into your neighbor's Rottweiler and trying to pull him out of the backyard. It's just big-time power. Using the 6-7-inch topwater wood chopper type baits that make a lot of noise, and to watch these fish come out of the water and hit these lures is unreal. Matter of fact, next Tuesday and Saturday, people can tune into NBC Sports, show called Season on the Edge. It'll be 11:30 on Tuesday morning and 7:30 Saturday morning. I had a good friend I guided with in Alaska, has a TV show. Kenny Baldwin came down and filmed two shows, and they'll air Tuesday and Saturday of next week on NBC Sports. Used to be Versus on cable.
Well, I'll certainly be setting my DVR for that, guarantee you. Jim, I saw some pictures of some massive mule deer bucks that you guys harvested this past season out in West Texas around Marathon, I think it was.
Our hunters took two exceptional desert mule deer. One was a 4x5 that was 28 inches inside. Another was a 7x5 that was 26 inches inside.
Wow.
And surprisingly, even with the drought, the biggest one field dressed at 255 pounds, which is a tremendous desert mule deer.
Wow, that is incredible. Now, I know that you still enjoy hunting, but these days you've really fallen in love with the photography aspect of the outdoors, and you even have your own website, jimkernphotography.com.
Yes. I think I operate about three of them, jimkernphotography.com, CAPTpeacock.com, and emuoutfitting.com. When you're maintaining three Facebook pages, this becomes a full-time job, I can tell you.
You ain't kidding. I can barely keep up with my own Facebook and Twitter. Jim, let's talk a little baseball, as this is opening weekend of the 2012 season. Our Texas Rangers, two-time defending AL champions, they lost C.J. Wilson, but picked up Yu Darvish. And I know that you still keep up with the club, having pitched for them from 78 to 81. You were an all-star, actually, for the Rangers in 78. You set a lot of club records that season, and I believe you even finished fourth in the Cy Young voting. And I know you'll be out there this weekend for some of the festivities. How do you see this club doing in 2012?
They introduce us old has-beens and just before the game, and it should be a good year for them. You can really see a big difference with Nolan and Daniels at the helm. Nolan adds an intangible to the team that no other team has. You don't not only have a savvy baseball man from the administration end, as he's owned several minor league teams, but he also knows the players' ideas and their apprehensions and such, and dealing with management. The Schieffer Bush regime produced some great teams. First, want Rangers to get into playoffs, but they oriented their salary structure and philosophy more around hitting than they did pitching. And in an extended series, postseason especially, pitching is the name of the game. Then they went out and got Darvish, a 25-year-old. Everybody thinks he's a unknown, but he pitched over 200 innings last year. The kid is built American style for pitching, being 6'5". At 25, I think it was an exceptional deal. This kid has got 5 to 8 years before he gets old in baseball terms. He's oriented around the fastball, is able to make the ball sink, which is very important in Ranger Stadium. If you get a ball up in the air, it's got a good chance of leaving the area code.
Right.
But they've augmented themselves with a couple of good lefty starters. We'll see what Police does as a starter. He's definitely got the tools. They thought he might have had a temperament problem as far as being a relief pitcher. Being a short relief pitcher, they're different kinds of people. You can't let pressure worry you. If you get your face beat in today, you've got to go out tomorrow with having the attitude that just come get me, I'm here, I'm going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just aren't suited for that long term. Some of us like the Amazing Emu and Sparky Lyle, the Count, and Raleigh Fingers and Goose Gossage. These people were just extremely ornery, thought they could defeat the world, and didn't have any apprehensions about people beating them. They were going to crush these people every time they got in there.
No kidding. Definitely a different type of mentality there. So give us your prediction.
Let's say we're going to get to the playoffs. Good depth, good young kids. They're going to make it to the playoffs. I'm going to say they're going to win 97 to 101 games this year.
Right on. 101 wins. That would be nice. I tell you what. There you have it. Our 2012 Texas Rangers prediction from former Ranger All-Star, the Amazing Emu, Jim Kern. Always love visiting with you. Happy hunting. And we will see you out at the ballpark this weekend.
Sounds great.
So there he goes, Jim Kern, the Amazing Emu. And by the way, in 1978, he had one of the best seasons for a relief pitcher ever. 143 innings, 29 saves. He also won 13 games while posting a 1.57 ERA. That is still a Ranger record for any pitcher with over 100 innings pitched in a season. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into some flounder fishing with Texas Fish and Game Executive Editor Chester Moore. You're listening to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show.
I cut me a cane pole. I'm going catfish fishing. I'm going catfish fishing. A catfish I'm fishing.
Rockwall Marine is North Texas' premier boat dealership, offering the finest lineup of fishing boats anywhere. Mercury, Yamaha, Evinrude, Basscat, Alumacraft, and War Eagle. Yep, you'll find them all at Rockwall Marine. Also specializing in all aspects of rigging, from power poles and electronics to motors and trolling motors. So whether you're looking for a new or used boat, parts or service, Rockwall Marine is your one-stop boating center. Call Tommy Yetz at 972-771-4442 or visit rockwallmarine.com today. Hey y'all, Cable Smith here for Tioga Retrievers. As bird hunters, we expect the most out of our gun dogs. And that's why I sent my sweet girl Belle to Angie and Tim Becker at Tioga Retrievers. Not only were her manners and obedience spot on in the blind and in the field, but Belle picked up over 200 birds in her first season. So whether you want a well-rounded hunting dog or just a well-mannered companion for the home, Tioga Retrievers has you covered. Located in Aubrey, Texas, visit TiogaRetrievers.com. That's T-I-O-G-A Retrievers.com.
Howdy folks, I'm Lee Hoffpower for Hoffpower Polaris and the Outdoor Superstore in Goquet, Texas. I sure would like to thank everybody for making Hoffpower Polaris' 2011 our best year in business yet. And I've got a feeling that 2012 is going to be even better. Speaking of 2011 and 2012, we've got a few 2011 model Polaris still on the lot. You bargain hunters need to come snap them up. They won't last long. Now, we have a whole lot and warehouse full of 2012s. Now, on top of Polaris, we also sell New Holland, tractors and equipment, Bush Hog and Rhino, Woods and Agmire equipment, Bad Boy mowers and ATVs, Dixie Chopper mowers. Folks, we also sell Big Tex and S&H trailers. And when you go inside the showroom, we've got lots of cool stuff there too. Yeti coolers, Arctic Ridge coolers. We've got Benchmade knives, Gerber gear, and Outdoor Edge knives. And we've also got Cannon and Winchester gun safes. That's just a list of few. If you're looking for some great deals, come see us today. Hoffpower's Polaris and Outdoor Superstore. Check us out on the web at houtdoor.com. And remember, Hoffpower's has been in Central Texas for over 47 years now. And folks, we couldn't have stuck around this long if we were steering you wrong.
Southern Deer Stands manufactures the only high-quality, lightweight, aluminum-insulated hunting blinds on the market, providing years of use without any maintenance. That's right, no more rotting, rusting, or repairing. Just hunting. Southern Deer Stands product lineup includes tower blinds with staircases, trailer blinds, and ground blinds on skids. We also have deer blind windows, doors, tower stands, and more. Whether you need one or 20 blinds, we'll deliver and set up right on your ranch or lease. Call Rob at 214-551-1530 or visit us at www.southerndeerstands.com.
Well, me, I'm doing fine with my 30-pound test line. Yeah, I'm just trying to keep the sand out of my beard. Well, the redfish seem happy here like they ain't got a thing to fear. Washing down with fast cold beer, they don't seem.
That's the music of Trey Clark bringing us back on the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hoffpower Polaris. Hope y'all are having a fantastic weekend. I'm Cable Smith, by the way, and I sure do appreciate you tuning in and letting me ride shotgun on this beautiful Texas morning. We're about to talk some flounder fishing here, but first, I want to remind everyone to check out STI International. Next time you're thinking about a new handgun, they're Texas-made and Texas-proud.
I've got a 9mm. Absolutely love shooting that bad boy. I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed if you pick one up for yourself. So go ahead and check out STIGuns.com. Well, our next guest is an authority on flounder. He's also the executive editor of Texas Fish and Game Magazine. It's my pleasure to welcome Chester Moore to the program.
I appreciate it, man. It's always great to communicate with fellow outdoors lovers.
Well, Chester, I want to talk flounder fishing this morning. You are an authority on the subject. Really enjoyed your latest piece in Texas Fish and Game, the Flounder Q&A. So how long have you been chasing these tasty flatfish?
I've been fishing for flounder basically since I could fish. I probably caught my first flounder when I was 6 or 7 years old, and I've really been passionately pursuing them since I was in my late teens. Uh-huh. So 20-plus years of passionate pursuit of flounder.
Right on. Well, Chester, are there more flounder fishermen today than, say, when you started flounder fishing 20-plus years ago?
You know, that's a really hard question, because as far as I know, there is no actual data on that. But here's what I can give you anecdotally. I think that we went through a period in the, like, say, 70s and 80s where flounder fishing was very popular because the numbers of fish were high. Then you started to see this really large dip in flounder numbers, and you had kind of a leveling off of the numbers of people. Now we're seeing the numbers rise again. Started riding in 1992 when I was a freshman in college. 20th year being an outdoor rider, the interest in flounder that I'm seeing is at a peak level, and it's growing literally by the day. I mean, I just get more feedback from people than ever on flounder. My flounder books are selling well. All of my Flatfish University courses I teach are sold out. The interest in flounder, I think, especially from people who want to learn to catch some artificial lures, is probably at an all-time high.
Well, that is great news, but things haven't always been so bright for our flounder fishery. 2 years ago, Texas Parks and Wildlife made sweeping changes to the flounder bag limit, dropping it to 5 fish per angler per day and only 2 fish during the November spawn. So I guess how dire was the situation for our flounder?
Oh, it was bad, you know, and what happened was people get this idea because maybe they fish in the fall flounder run, that's the only time they fish. We caught a lot of fish. Well, that's because every fish in that bay system is funneling through one spot. It looks like there's a lot of fish there. But according to Parks and Wildlife's creel surveys, their dockside surveys, their gill net surveys, and purse seines, which are very, very detailed, the number of flounder in Texas was like 50-plus percent below when they started doing the surveys. We're talking about half the population left.
Wow.
So it was very, very bad. And I was on the steering committee to help formulate these regulations, and It's a very, very positive step in the right direction. As a matter of fact, it's so positive. We're right at the 2.5-year mark since these kicked in. And what's happened since then is that according to all those same details I gave you of Parks and Wildlife surveys, it's the highest number of flounder since 1998. So we're already seeing a big boost in flounder number.
Wow. And that seems pretty incredible after only 2.5 years.
Yeah, well, flounder has about a 6 to 7 year average lifespan. So when we were on this committee, the biologist told us that right around the 6-year mark, we would see probably the full measure of what this would do. So we're maybe about halfway there, and it's just it was a really good regulation, because what it did, it didn't just restrict the average angler from taking 5 fish. It also cut commercial flounder fishing efforts in half and eliminated gigging and commercial gigging in the month of November, when it's like basically like shooting fish in a barrel. I have nothing against recreational gigging per se. I'm not a gigger myself, but I'm the last person that wants to regulate anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we had to do this wisely. And what happened was, I told people, if we went to Lake Fork, and we said, you know what, guys, we're going to go to the legislature and say, we're going to go to Lake Fork, and we're going to open bow fishing and spear fishing with spear guns for bass on the beds in the month of March. Mm-hmm. There would be people with, like, tanks trying to stop us from getting there to do it, right?
Right.
That's exactly what you're doing with flounder. Start off with, they're leaving the spawn, and they're concentrated in certain areas in November. So it'd be the same thing as shooting a bedding bass on Lake Fork. The only difference is the numbers of bass at places like Lake Fork are at historical highs, and flounder at the time the reg changes happen were historical lows.
Well, it's awesome to kind of get that inside look from someone who was right there on the front lines and actually helping in getting those regulations changed.
Sort of writing about making these kind of changes, my first article on this was 1996 in CCA's Tide magazine, calling for elimination of commercial harvest, restricting a bag limit, and we need to get a stocking program going. So we're seeing all those things happen. CCA got really on board. You know, I've been kind of behind the scenes working on a lot of stuff with legislators and things over the years. Parks and Wildlife was noticing, hey, look, we got to do something on this. And I think it was a wise decision, because everybody still gets to harvest, and even in their own way. Giggers want to gig, they can still gig, but we had to do it in a way that was respectful. If you think about it, Redfish numbers are at their historical highs. We only keep three of those. It was insane to keep 10 flounder when they were at historical lows.
Uh-huh. And all you have to do is look at the success that the changes in the redfish regulations have had, and you realize the Coastal Fisheries Division really knows what they're doing.
I hate when people say, well, all we caught was a bunch of redfish today. I'm like, yes. I remember when we hardly ever caught redfish. So I celebrate the comeback of the redfish.
You and me both, buddy. And it's great to know that we're getting close to being able to celebrate flounder in much the same way. Chester, we do have to take a quick break, but I still got a lot to ask you. I want to know where to find them, how to catch them, all that great stuff. Can you stick around for another segment?
Absolutely.
Perfect. We'll be right back with more Flounder Talk with the great Chester Moore. You're listening to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Need to buy a trailer? Well, Big Tex Trailers is DFW's number one source for trailers. In addition to utility trailers, we have the largest selection of cargos anywhere. CM Cargos, Wells Cargos, Hallmark, Cargo Craft, and Pace. You want it, we got it. Come and get it. Call 972-501-0200 or go to BigTexDFW.com. That's Big Tex Trailers, tough as a Texas Longhorn.
Cable Smith here for Magnolite, a Texas-based lighting company that's been outfitting the United States military since the 1960s. Over the past decade, Magnolite has continued to support our troops, but now they have over 200 lights ideal for your hunting and fishing needs, like the 35-watt HID camouflage Go Light Striker with handheld remote. That's 15 million candle power in the palm of your hand, ideal for predator and hog hunting. They also have remote-controlled floodlights, feeder lights, and LED boat lights. So go Texan and go Magnolite. Check them out at www.magnolite.com for all your outdoor lighting needs.
Sweetwater Creek Bow Hunting Ranch was designed specifically with the Texas bow hunter in mind. And of course, we hunt axis, fallow, and red deer through mid-March. Right now, hunters choose between $100 off your hunt or adding a doe to your harvest at no cost, whichever you choose. Our 2,500-acre high-fence, bow-only ranch is located just outside DFW in Decatur. Call Jim Bob Little at 940-393-5853 or visit sweetwatercreekbowhunt.com to book your hunt today.
Hi, I'm Craig Boddington. I'd like to invite you to become a member of Dallas Safari Club, one of the world's leading hunting and conservation organizations. As a member, you'll receive Game Trails magazine, a monthly newsletter, and invitations to our monthly meetings and special activities. Join Dallas Safari Club, an international organization based in Dallas, supporting hunting and conservation worldwide. For more information, call 800-9-GO-HUNT or visit our website at www.biggame.org.
If you're in the market for a firearm, you need to know about STI International. Based out of Georgetown, Texas, they're 100% employee-owned and offer the best warranty and customer service in the business. STI is renowned worldwide for exceptional fit and function. The patented 2011 high-capacity system proved so successful in shooting competitions that over 80% of competitors used STI guns or pistols built on STI frames at the USPSA National Championships. To see their full line of premier pistols, visit STIGuns.com or check them out on Facebook at STI Firearms. STI, the continuing evolution of the 1911.
Whitetail season has come and gone, but that doesn't mean it's time to stop hunting. Coons Canyon Ranch in Rock Springs, Texas specializes in exotics such as axis deer and black buck. Coons Canyon offers quality animals at a price the working man can afford. Right now, save 10% on any package of multiple animals. Military personnel, police, and firefighters also get 10% off. Lodging is available upon request, as are other exotic species. Visit CoonsCanyonRanch.com for your next exotic trophy hunt. That's CoonsCanyonRanch.com.
Because the weather's nice and the water's bright. Man, I could fish here all damn night. When you had a bad day and your mind is in a haze, you can clear your head in the salt water bay.
My all-time favorite fishing tunes there, Saltwater Bay is the name of that one. Great stuff from Brandon Key. I'm Cable Smith, welcoming everybody back to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. And we are talking some saltwater bays this morning, specifically flounder angling. And we'll get back into that here momentarily. But first, a reminder to stop by Rudy's Barbecue for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. They've got locations all over Texas, including the newest Rudy's in front of the Cabela's in Allen. Rudy's, true Texas-style barbecue. Well, let's go ahead and pick it back up with the authority on Texas flounder fishing, renowned outdoor writer Chester Moore, and Chester was nice enough to stick around through the break. So, Chester, I know that you can catch flounder year-round in our bay systems, but what is your absolute favorite time, the ideal time to get out there and really target flounder?
All right, my favorite time of the year, I'm going to have to be, you know, kind of easy here and go with the fall. The fall migration is my favorite, simply because there's so many fish moving through certain points. You have a chance to catch a lot of fish. I have a program called Flatfish University where I teach flounder fishing clinics and courses. They're very detailed courses, and Mr. Twister sponsors that. And I went out on a challenge for Mr. Twister to catch and release 100 flounder on lures in 5 days. About 102 in 4 days last year during the fall run. That's why I like the fall run. However, I tend to catch my bigger fish during the spring run. They leave in the fall, they come back in the spring, and it's not as big of a movement of fish. It's kind of more of a steady thing happening. But this time of year is when I tend to catch a lot of my bigger fish. But I tell you what, I caught and released or donated to Sea Center Texas for broodstock over 400 flounder last year.
Wow. Awesome, man. Awesome.
I'm blessed. It's a great. I mean, I'm an outdoor writer. I'm blessed. I get to do this for a living. And I realize a lot of the listeners, you know, they go work hard 9 to 5, can fish maybe on a Saturday. They get a chance. And, you know, don't get disheartened because you don't get these kind of numbers in your own fish. It's all relative to the time you get to spend on the water. And trust me, I hold my time as sacred as anybody else. And I salute all of you guys who only get that small window of time to fish. You know, that's why I try to give as much information as possible. And that's why it's great to be listening to radio programs like this. So you can fill yourself with information so your time in the water is better.
Well, Chester, I know that most of those fish were caught on artificial. You know, you do use live bait occasionally, but what are your personal favorite baits for flounder?
My very favorite is something I've been fishing since 1996. It is a twister tail from Mr. Twister. It's a curl tail grub, and I like the colors pink, their glow, and I also like their shrimp color. I like the 3-inch is called the mini, and the 4-inch is the twister tail. It's the same mold, different sizes. And I tip that with a piece of shrimp and fish it on an 8-ounce jig head. That's my all-time favorite flounder lure. I would definitely recommend using fluorocarbon line, or at least a fluorocarbon leader, because they are line shy when it comes to clear water.
Once again, we're visiting with Chester Moore, author of Flounder Fever and executive editor of Texas Fish and Game Magazine. You know, you said something interesting there, that you tipped the lure with a piece of shrimp. That's very similar to the way we were crappie fishing on Fork the other day when we were tipping our jigs with live minnows.
Yeah, what it does is, especially on the upper Texas coast, our water isn't that clear. So when you tip, you give a scent trail as well. And then when the fish bites on it, gives it a realistic taste. And I fish with and without tipping, not even close. Tipping the shrimp makes a huge difference. Interestingly, I've also, in experiments, fished with just a jig head and shrimp. Caught a few fish, but that combination of all that movement and the color and the taste and smells what makes a difference.
Okay, so there's your favorite artificial setup. What if you were using live bait? What would you choose?
I'm a mud minnow guy. Now, I like shad. I like baby croaker. I mean, I've used all of it.
Uh-huh.
Mullet. But I have found, in my experience, live mud minnows are the best. I have caught my biggest, before the one I caught in the Flounder Fever book, the biggest I caught, I was like 18 years old, and I caught it on a live mud minnow, a really big one. I like them because they stay alive and alive well a long time. They're real wiggly, they move around a lot, and I found flounder like them. But, you know, it depends on your area. Some areas, they tend to bite mullet better. For example, in speckled trout, croaker's all the craze if you go Matagorda to South for live bait, but on Sabine Lake, you really have a hard time catching trout on croaker. Mullet works here. So it just kind of depends on your bait system. Get plugged in what works for you.
Right on. Well, let's go back to the artificial rig here for a second, and I'm going to let you describe your technique for drawing a strike while fishing the twister tail tipped with shrimp.
Okay, what I do, I have kind of a unique setup. My basic setup is I use a spinning rod. It's like a medium-heavy spinning rod, and I use braided line. I like Berkeley Fireline a lot. I like something because it's sensitive, and I can feel it also has no stretch. And a flounder has a very bony mouth. A lot of people miss a flounder at the boat or can't feel the bite because the bony mouth, and they set the hook with a stretching monofilament and a buggy whip rod and don't get set up. So the first step is the rod and the braided line. What I like to do, I like to take that and I like to throw it out. I don't make real long casts a lot of times. I pitch it along an area. I drag it. I kind of start with little tiny hops. I'll drag maybe 6 inches, make a tiny hop, let it sit, drag, let it sit, pull, you know, just kind of feel and do tiny, tiny hops. And then if the bite's real aggressive, I may speed the retrieve up and make longer casts to cover more water. But I don't like to make a lot of long shots at first, because if I make that long shot, it's a little hard to feel the real subtle bites of the flounder. So drag a foot, tiny hop, let it sit, drag a foot, tiny hop, let it sit. You don't want to have that rod tip moving a whole lot.
Okay, and as far as where to find flounder right now, this time of year, what areas are you targeting?
Okay, you can go to any bay system on the Texas coast or the Louisiana coast right now, and we're at the tail end of the spring migration. Our big incoming tides are still bringing a few flounders from the Gulf of Mexico into the bays. So the ship channel areas linking the bays and the Gulf, the mouth of the estuaries, are pretty good right now, especially for those guys fishing live bait, because it's a little bit deeper water there and a little bit of live bait fishing. But once you enter the bays right now, a lot of the flounder are already set up along the cuts. Any little slough, bayou, or any kind of a water moving from marsh or maybe a seagrass bed or between islands is a great place, because flounder are ambush predators. They like to sit in areas where there's a high concentration of bait fish and ambush as it comes out. So I like, preferably, this is the ideal Chester Moore flounder scenario, is to fish an incoming tide at the mouth of one of these inlets, and I like to target the eddy. If there's an eddy or area of slack water right at the edge, a small bait fish gather up in those eddies and the flounder hammer them. So that's kind of like the perfect flounder scenario.
Okay, and what depth are you typically fishing?
Average depth that I end up fishing is anywhere from about 2 to 5 feet of water. Not real deep stuff.
Let's switch gears here for a moment. I know you mentioned Flatfish University earlier, but why don't you tell us a little more about it?
Well, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. I'm an educator. That's what I want to do. I want to teach people things, and all these flounder skills that I've learned over the years and really put a passionate pursuit of, kind of the culmination of that is Flatfish University. You can go to flatfishuniversity.com for more information. I teach classes, very specific classes on flounder fishing. I mean, this is about as specific as you can possibly get. And what we do, I limit my classes to 20 people. People pay, basically the class fee is usually $44.95. They get an e-book curriculum I wrote specifically for the class, and they get basically a full day with me talking about a very specific flounder subject. And it's, I mean, we're talking about really, really specific stuff. For example, I have Flounder 101. That teaches you how to go from fishing from reds and specks to flounder. I had a class that I did in February called Search for the State Record. That entire class, that entire day was dedicated to seeking the biggest fish, trying to break the state record, how to use live bait in certain scenarios, how to use lures and different kind of things. The top days on the calendar, unlocking the mysteries of how the south wind plays into the flounder bite, certain days to look for, even GPS coordinates.
Wow, really specific stuff there. And you can find out more at flatfishuniversity.com. Real quick, talk a little bit about Flounder Revolution, as we are almost out of time, man.
Yeah, Flounder Revolution, I heard that somebody told me, well, you kind of started a flounder movement. Well, a movement is something that stops moving. Like, you know, you get a movement and then it ends. Mm-hmm. A revolution keeps coming back around, and the name revolution just stuck with me. I started this 4 years ago now, and the number one thing we have is a replica tournament. So basically, I ripped off the share liquor concept. And every month we have a catch and release tournament, all right? And the angler from March through November, during the peak flounder time, the angler who catches the biggest flounder 20 inches or more, measures that fish and documents like I have on the website, gets a replica of their fish courtesy of the Coastal Conservation Association, who sponsors it, and the fish mount store, through the mounts. They're incredible, incredible flounder mounts. Then at the end of the, oh yeah, also new this year, we get a coaster. Coaster's going to give a pair of shades to each angler who does that as well. So you get coaster shades and a replica. And at the end of the year, the angler with the most caught and released flounder gets our Flounder Angler of the Year title. They get a really cool plaque, and they get a $1,000 tackle package. We're trying to promote people releasing 20-inch or better flounder, because those are the key breeding fish. I'm all for people eating flounder. I still eat flounder. But if you release the big ones, we'll have an opportunity to, in the future, have plenty of them around for everyone else.
Right on. Well, Chester, we are out of time for today, my friend. I sure do appreciate it. It's been very informative and educational. It was great visiting with you. And, of course, I'm looking forward to your next article in Texas Fishing Game.
Well, man, thank you for the opportunity. And thanks to everyone out there who supports Flounder and everything like that. You can find me at flounderrevolution.com, flatfishuniversity.com, or on Facebook. And keep supporting this guy here. He's doing great stuff on the air.
Appreciate the kind words, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
So there he goes, the great Chester Moore. Hope you all found that as informative as I did. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Casey Kiefer of Dropped Pro. Project Alaska, the hit show on Sportsman's Channel. That's coming up. You're listening to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show.
Hey Lone Star Outdoors listeners, shoot clays and pull for kids at the Frostbank Sporting Clays Challenge April 28th at the Dallas Gun Club. Compete with your team of friends on two walkable courses, eat good food, and have a chance to win a great giveaway gun or auction item. All proceeds benefit the children served by Buckner. Call 214-758-8017 or visit BucknerEvents.com to register your team. Come on out April 28th to the Dallas Gun Club and pull for kids.
Alaska's all-inclusive Kodiak Sportsman's Lodge is the place to go for the fishing trip of a lifetime. You'll enjoy Alaska's highest bag limits for king salmon, black sea bass, yellow eye, ling cod, silver salmon, and halibut. Only 7 boats operate out of Old Harbor, and Kodiak owns 4 of them, so fishing pressure is never an issue. Drop lines within 20 minutes of the lodge in waters that are weather-protected in the Sitka-Litik Strait. Call 866-744-8777 or visit KodiakSportsmansLodge.com to book your fishing trip on Kodiak Island, one of the last great American frontiers.
Hey everybody, this is Brian Spegnall from TexasMotorCars.com. I'm here today to tell you about the best place in Texas to shop for your next vehicle. TexasMotorCars.com is a family-owned and operated business located in Addison, Texas. We have a huge inventory of pre-owned vehicles and specialize in trucks and SUVs. Please visit TexasMotorCars.com today. Come see me, Brian Spagnola. Our phone number is 972-481-1660.
Cable Smith here with my good buddy Craig Smith, owner and founder of Game Guard. And Craig, I guess the question everybody wants to know is, what inspired you to create that signature Game Guard camouflage pattern?
I had a friend of mine that challenged me to come up with a better pattern. I didn't like the patterns that fit, you know, Southwest Texas. So he said, you know, if you don't like it, do something about it. And that's really kind of where it started. I really wanted to get the colors correct because to me it's all about, you know, blending in and having the right tones at that time of the year. And so I just sat down and started drawing this pattern out. And it took me about a year to get it the way I wanted it and get the colors the way I wanted it. And, you know, the rest is kind of history, as they say.
Hey, Craig, we appreciate it. Made by the Texas Deer Hunter for the Texas Deer Hunter. Be sure to check out their full line of outdoor apparel at GameGuard.net.
The only things that can save my soul. Mama's cooking, praying to the Lord. And moonshine made from Texas
corn is the name of that one from John Brewer. I'm Cable Smith, welcoming y'all back to the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. This segment proudly brought to you by River Rim Resort on the Frio River. Visit riverrimresort.com to find out more about this hidden gem of the real Texas Hill Country. Well, without further delay, let's go ahead and welcome our next guest, Casey Kiefer of Dropped Project Alaska, the hit show on Sportsman's Channel. Casey, thanks for dropping in, man.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for having me, Cable. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, man. It really is. I guess first thing I want to know is if you've had a chance to get out in those turkey woods yet this spring.
You know what? I haven't. I live way up in northern Michigan, so last week we still had a little bit of snow, but I'll be out there soon enough. I know turkey season's kicking up all over the country.
There you go. Well, Casey, let's go ahead and talk about Dropped Project Alaska. It just wrapped up on Sportsman's Channel. Awesome show. But I'm sure everybody wants to know, whose idea was this for you and your brother Chris to be dropped off in the Alaskan wilderness and really just try to live off the land and rough it for 30 days?
You know, it was kind of a team effort. My brother Chris and I, as well as Jason Brown, who's our partner in Rusted Rooster, he's also our lead field producer. The three of us were just kind of sitting around one day, you know, and we always wanted to do kind of a do-it-yourself moose hunt for our other show, Backcountry Quest TV. So it started there, and then you know, things snowball when we get to spitballing sometimes. And next thing you know, we were 30 days with no food for moose and caribou and black bear and everything else. So it was a pretty crazy brainstorm session.
So that's where it all started. Now, you know, something interesting that wasn't really hit on during the broadcast of the show was that y'all really had four mouths to feed because you had two cameramen that were dropped with you guys.
Yeah, we did. We had Trent, who was our other field producer. He'd been with us for about 6 years now. And then obviously Jason Brown. So yeah, there was actually four of us, which It puts a puts a lot of pressure on you when you got 4 mouths to feed. You know that you got two other guys that are dependent on you, you know, to get their food on the ground. I mean, it's a lot of pressure.
Now, you and your brother Chris each had a caribou and moose tag, correct?
Yeah, Chris and I both had caribou tags, and we both had moose tags. Mm-hmm. So where we got dropped off was way up further in the valley, on a little gem of a river, basically in the Brooks Range. And we had 110 miles to go until we were going to get picked up, and we were going to try and take all those animals along the way.
Uh-huh. And you eventually do get a caribou down. A big wave of emotion comes over you. I mean, obviously, y'all have food now, and I believe that actually happened on your son's birthday.
Yes. Yeah, it was on my son's first birthday. That kill was probably the most important kill of the entire trip. You know, we were a couple days into the trip at that point, and you know, we've been living off grayling in the river and blueberries, but, you know, not a lot of sustenance there. So it was one of those things where that caribou kill meant a lot. It took us 12 hours to do the whole thing and stalk him and everything else, and the pouring down rain. Pretty triumphant moment. It was a cool hunt.
Let me ask you, just, you know, as someone who's been in outdoor television for a while, how, you know, it's difficult enough just by yourself to stalk up on an animal, but when you've got a, you know, your brother and a cameraman there, I mean, how difficult is that to get the cameraman in position to get it all on film?
You know, it pretty much, in my opinion, it doubles the degree of difficulty. You know, I always tell guys, you know, you can compare it a lot to, you know, when you're hanging in a tree trying to kill a big whitetail and you're trying to stay scent free with one person and stay hidden with no silhouettes. I mean, throw two people in the mix and all of a sudden your task is doubled. You know, the same goes for spot and stalk. It's one of those deals where everybody's got to be on the same page going into it, or your chances for success aren't going to be very good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I think you saw a little bit in that episode where, you know, my brother and I kind of had two different ideas of what we wanted to do, you know, but eventually we came together and said, look, this is how we're going to do it. Let's make it happen. So,
yeah. And that was one of the cool dynamics of just watching the show. You know, obviously you and your brother are best friends, but you know, part of that relationship is you're going to disagree and you're going to butt heads sometimes.
We butt heads a lot, you know, we're both pretty stubborn guys and kind of set in our ways. So, you know, the good thing is, you know, when you're out there, you realize, okay, you know, maybe, you know, we would get up in the mornings and, okay, who's hunting today? Okay, Chris, you're hunting today, or I'm hunting today. So, you know, we'd get up in the mornings and decide who was hunting. And basically from there on out for the rest of the day, I mean, it's your hunt. I'm going to follow you whether I agree or not. You know, I may throw my ideas out there, but ultimately, you know, this is your hunt. I trust you, and I'm going to follow you however you want to do this thing. So, you know, a lot of that happens when you're out there because you do have, you know, two guys and, you know, you each have the same tag. So kind of trying to make it fair for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, throughout the whole adventure, protecting the meat, from starting with the caribou and then, you know, gradually getting into the moose, that was, you know, pretty much the most important task. Describe how you guys went about the process of protecting that harvest as you continually moved camp down the river.
Yeah. Yeah, that's in Alaska. Obviously, wanton waste is a great law that they have up there, where you cannot waste any portion of the animal whatsoever. You've got to take all of the meat out of the field before you can touch the antlers. So, you know, there's a lot of good laws that they've got in place up there. But keeping the meat is super important, just because, you know, for us, we were trying to survive off of that meat, so we needed to stretch that meat out as far as we could. And having killed a caribou so early, you know, just a few days into the hunt, you know, moose season, prime moose season was still 20 days away. So we, you know, we really had to keep that meat, because we knew that if we didn't get another caribou, it would be, you know, possibly 20 days until we got a great crack at a moose. So, you know, keeping the meat, there's a lot of things you got to do, but the main things are, you know, keep it dry, keep it elevated, and keep it cool and out of the sun. If you can do those few things right there and you're able to accomplish those, you're able to keep meat for a really long time. We did take food grade citric acid with us, which basically, you know, we sprayed a layer on the outside of the meat, which basically cooks the outside to keep anything from penetrating or getting down into the bone. By leaving the bone in, you're going to keep meat longer because you expose less surface area to the outside environment. So, you know, we kept that caribou for 14 days. That caribou fed four guys.
Mm. Yeah. There's gotta be a point where your stomach's like, oh, no more red meat.
Yeah. There definitely comes a point where your stomach doesn't want anything to do with it anymore. You know, on those days, we would kind of switch it up and try to throw, you know, a fish or two into the mix just for a change of flavor or something. But, you know, you still appreciate every bite of that caribou because you know you could be without it too.
Oh, absolutely. And once again, we're visiting with Casey Kiefer of Dropped Project Alaska. Casey, you guys were out there for 30 days. What was the absolute low point for you?
We blew through. We got stuck in some whitewater, and we ended up miles and miles downriver from where we wanted to be. You know, we had our GPSs. We had seen some of the river from the air flying in. Now, we didn't see all of it, but we had seen some of it. So we kind of knew what was where, but we never did get to see the section of rapids from the air. So when we got caught up in that whitewater, you know, we blew by so many miles of what we were in our minds looking at on topo maps and GPSs as really good moose ground. We were looking at it as though that's when we're really going to start getting into the thick, heavy moose country. You know, and next thing you know, we look on the GPS, and because of the whitewater and the high banks and nowhere to stop, I mean, we were literally miles and miles from where we wanted to be. So, you know, at that point in time, I'm sitting there looking at the GPS. I'm looking at how many days are left in season. I'm looking at the fact that we haven't had a moose within, you know, a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, man, you know, maybe we bit off a little bit more than we can chew here. I mean, this is getting frustrating. But, you know, all in all, we ended up making camp at the first possible spot. And, you know, that was Prayer Point. And that's what we called it. We said, guys, this is Prayer Point. This is on a wing and a prayer right here. It's still good moose country, but, you know, this is a wing and a prayer, so we'll see what happens.
And that prayer was definitely answered when your brother, Chris, took down his moose, a massive bull, Boone and Crockett bull. But it pretty much wandered right into camp. So, you know, it's like with anything else, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Well, you know, one of the things that that we did and we kind of learned earlier on is you don't, when you're moose hunting, you don't want to stray too far from camp. If you can't get the raft over there, you can't float up it or something, you don't want to get too far from camp because otherwise you're going to end up packing if you kill a bull way back in there, you're going to end up packing out this monstrous animal. It's going to take, you know, hours, possibly even days to get it out. You could lose the carcass to a grizzly when you're packing out and you show up and there he is on your carcass. So, I mean, there's a lot of bad things that can happen. So what we did is every camp, you know, we would try to put camp where there's an area that had some lakes and stuff like that dotted back in through the bush. And, you know, it's basically call from camp and be patient. You know, the more you call from camp, we would call about every 45 minutes to an hour. Let out a couple of cow calls, maybe a few bull grunts, and then just sit and wait. And the thing about moose is during the rut, they'll commit to you, but it may take them a day and a half just to show up. Hmm. So you really got to have patience when you're hunting moose. I mean, everybody thinks in Alaska that there's moose and animals around every corner. You know, the fact is there's not. I mean, people forget how big and how vast Alaska's wilderness really is. And yes, there's a lot of game, but when you give that amount of game, that kind of territory to roam, you're not going to see animals around every bend, and that's just the way it is. So you got to be patient.
Right on. So Chris gets his moose down, awesome bull, and he comes at a great time because y'all are pretty much out of caribou meat at that point. And then, you know, a couple days go by and y'all move down river a little bit farther and you get your bull, a great archery kill, but the moose, you know, you hit him and he wanders out into the river and he goes down in the river and he starts to float off.
And he's gone. Yeah, that was I was a little nervous at that point. You know, the moose up there, they're raised on the river. So they're taught from the time that they're a calf that, you know, if a bear comes around, go in the water. If they're in danger, go in the water. That's just what they're taught. They live on the river, they die on the river. So, you know, when I hit that moose with the arrow, you know, he took off, charged right into the water. Boom, and he went down. I mean, I think it was like 25, 30 seconds before he went down. He hit the water, and he was actually kind of stuck there for a minute. And almost in the video, you can kind of see the panic in my eyes when whatever rock his antler was resting on in the bottom of the river decided to roll and give out. He just, his head kind of, boom, pops along the gravel, and then off he goes. And at that point, I'm sitting there going, oh, man, this is not good. You know, there's a lot of bad things that could have happened. You know, my big concern was he was going to hit the bend that was just downriver from us. He was going to carry the current would carry him to the outside. He would hit the sweeper on the outside, and it would just basically suck him underneath. And I'd never, an 1,800-pound animal sucked under the water in the corner of that 38-degree river, you're never going to get.
Nope.
So, you know, I was prepared to punch my tag at that point and put it back in my pocket because, you know, I knew the moose was dead. So.
Yep.
It was, thankfully it turned out though, you know, I don't know if somebody was smiling down on me that day or it was just pure luck, but whatever it was, I'm grateful.
Yeah.
He washed up.
Yeah. And I mean, that was some of the most amazing footage I've ever seen on outdoor TV. Is that available on YouTube?
It's not available on the internet as of yet. We're trying, rapidly to get it up and get it available on our website.
Okay.
But there are the first season of Drop Project Alaska, the full length. Commercial free DVD is out and released. It's on our website, Drop TV as well. Apparel, all that stuff. So guys can go there and check it out.
Sweet. And that's available at droppedtv.com. Casey, how much weight did you lose in the 30 days while you were in the wilderness?
I lost about 26 pounds, 26 pounds, something like that.
Wow.
It was a grueling trip. I mean, you're burning so many calories out there when you're rowing and dragging and pushing and you know, skinning and everything else and just hiking and glassing. I mean, you're burning twice, three times what you're eating. So,
mm-hmm.
It was worth it in the end though. I mean, the battle that we put ourselves through was 100% worth it.
No doubt. No doubt. Casey, what was the first thing that you ate when you got back to civilization?
The first thing I ate actually was hot wings, man. I'm a freak for hot wings, buffalo wings. So we went to a little bar restaurant there in Fairbanks, and we got some hot wings, some pizza, and a couple of ice cold beers.
Right on, man. Well, Casey, during the season finale, the two-hour special, y'all mentioned you're working on a new project, and that'll be called Dropped Project X. I know you can't tell us where it will be, but give us a little more info on that deal.
We're actually in the middle of planning Dropped Project X as we speak, and Project X is basically nobody's going to know anything about the trip until Project X hits the air the very first time. So we're going to kind of keep it a shroud of secrecy. I can tell you that there's going to be more animals. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be better and badder than Project Alaska. And that's what we're going to try and do. And Drop Project X, as it's being planned right now, I can promise you will be bigger and better. You know, stay tuned to, the Drop TV Facebook and the website as well. We'll be giving people updates on where we are in the planning process and what gear we're taking and all kinds of cool stuff.
Well, we are certainly looking forward to it. Casey, thanks again, buddy, and we will touch base with you soon.
Okay, Cable. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Well, there he goes, Casey Kiefer of Dropped Project Alaska, soon to be Dropped Project X. Definitely looking forward to that. We appreciate his time today, as well as the great Chester Moore, and of course, the amazing emu, Jim Kern. That is going to do it for me. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making this show possible. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show. Until next time, I'm Cable Smith saying, y'all have a great week in the outdoors.
Honey, thanks a lot. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a broken heart, and that's all I've got. You made me cry, and I cried a lot. I lost your love, honey, thanks a lot. Oh, Leon.
Rockwall Marine is North Texas' premier boat dealership, offering the finest lineup of fishing boats anywhere. Mercury, Yamaha, Evinrude, Basscat, Alumacraft, and War Eagle. Yep, you'll find them all at Rockwall Marine. Also specializing in all aspects of rigging, from power poles and electronics to motors and trolling motors. So whether you're looking for a new or used boat, parts, or service, Rockwall Marine is your one-stop boating center. Call Tommy Yetz at 972-771-4442 or visit rockwallmarine.com today.